Welcome, everybody. Good to see quite a good turn up of C++ love here today. There's still some people coming in here, but I thought we should get started. This talk is going to be about Windows 8, C++. You could have figured that one out by the title. But it's really about the role that C++ has now in Windows 8, how we actually is sort of making it a first-class citizen again to be able to develop applications. We're going to go into that and see what we've done in terms of language extension, in terms of using and authoring WinRT components, a bunch of other stuff. Let's get started. That's me again. Level 300, it's a sort of in-depth. But really, it's an overview, but since it's C++, it's probably 300, but you're all C++, so we'll get along. So what are we going to talk about during this session? I like to explain how C++ fits in into this new Metro-style world of applications, how we can build them in various different ways, and such. We also are going to have an in-depth look at the language. So how do we actually consume WinRT, author WinRT, and how does that all work? And also, of course, looking at WinRT types, how they interoperate with the STD libraries, the standard libraries, and how we can sort of integrate these sort of regular old C++ code or modern C++ code, for that matter, with WinRT. So the agenda is pretty simple. I'm going to do an overview, talk a little bit where we're coming from, where we fit in. Then we're going to dig into all these sort of goals for a session of language libraries. I would like to do Q&A at the end. I've reserved about 10 minutes or so. If you have a really burning question you want to ask, please raise your hand and just I'll send Bjorn a running. And we can take it. But in the efficiency perspective, I think it's great to actually put them at the end. So just quick show of hands. How many of you are C++ developers, do it every day, some environment or another? Yeah, great. How many of you do C#, then .NET? Excellent. How many do assembler? No one these days. We tend to sort of debug code, so we learn x86 assembler. I was scared for a while that I had to learn Itanium, but that's sort of dropping off, so I'm not going there. It seems like I learning ARM these days. So I've done a lot of phone stuff, so I touched on it, and now we're coming up with it on the Windows platform as well. So, with that said, we are talking about the renaissance of C++. It's somewhat of a misnomer. I think it's really the renaissance of native code. Because native code is fast, native code is efficient, and of course C++ is the premier language, but it's not the only language, but it's the premier language to do that. So, and although it's not been dead, I mean, we had C++, obviously you guys work with it all day, but it's more of a system software thing, OS thing, close to the metal. I mean, we built Windows, obviously, in C++. C++ mostly in user mode, not so much kernel mode, although we're getting there. With this release, which is kind of interesting. But what are drivers really that sort of pushing native coding back into sort of mainstream app development? Performance per dollar is king again, and then that's largely what it hasn't been for the last 10, 15 years when we sort of just capitalize on machines getting faster and bigger. But now we want to do more on smaller device, on phones, tablets, system on a chip type of things. We also want to reduce the size of stuff, and then that's where C++ excel. We also wanted to reduce the power, because something around 70% of devices sold today are battery-powered. And the fewer cycles we use, the less power we drain. So it's not only about sort of fast response times in your app, it's actually using less cycles. And that also extends to the data center. And I'm kind of curious, I mean, data centers have got lots of machines. Yeah, that's part of the problem. But 90% of the cost for an average data center is power consumption. So if you can sort of double your perf on your app, you have the cost. So we see native code coming back on all these areas, and this is the rationale behind it. So with that sorted out, let's move on to the architectural diagram. So with Windows 8, we're doing a lot. We're introducing a new application model that you all heard about. This is called Metro Style Application, and that's the green part of it. If you look to the right, we have desktops app, as we all know and love them. We've been able to do that in C++ for a while, of course. We've sort of been tied to Win32. We haven't had any double presentation foundation. We not have any rich frameworks. We basically built those on MFC, perhaps, and the low-level GDI user APIs. They were sort of invented almost 30 years ago. So that's been the reality for C++. The C# has had much richer UI frameworks, SAML-driven in both Silverlight and WPF. And of course, we had the traditional web application using any browser, HTML, JavaScript. What we're doing in Windows 8 is exposing the OS in a new way. We have the core OS services at the bottom. They're the same. They are more efficient in Win 8. There are sort of new services, of course. But we are building the WinRT APIs, which is really is a sort of class-based, namespace-driven way of exposing the services of the OS. It's modern. It's safe. It can be used across application and language boundaries in an efficient way. It's not the low level that we did 30 years ago. So it's a very welcome modernization of that. And we expose, as you see in this, it's the hardware, cloud communication data, graphics and media, and stuff like that. The point is, we are projecting, as we say, we're projecting these APIs to the three languages that you see above, or four or five, depending on your count. But it can be consumed from C++. It can be consumed from C# and JavaScript. And that's the power of it. We also make it possible to actually write SAML-based C++ applications. So we have the designer that you've seen in Visual Studio for the phone or for other types of application previously. We can do that in native code. And I just want to emphasize on that WinRT is native through and through. Even, I mean, it's called a runtime, but it doesn't have a managed component. If you do C++, it's going to be native code all along. Of course, if you use C#, you're going to use some profile of the .NET framework. There's some profile now called the profile for Metro Style Apps or something like that. So it comes into play, but we've sort of removed a bunch of stuff there that you consume the WinRT APIs. There's another talk after this one on Windows 8 and .NET. I recommend you go there. This journey in Sol O. You can go and have a look. So this is the foundation, basically. So how does we dig into C++ stuff? What kind of application can we do? This is the sort of three main examples, really. We'll start on the top right. We can do SAML UI application. We design your interface in SAML, and we have the C++ in the code behind. So that's authored by the Visual Studio tooling, just as you would expect, and just as you have experienced in the other previous versions of the tools. We can also do game-style apps that uses DirectX and not SAML for the UI, and that's consumable C++ as it has always been. And we also have the kind of interesting hybrid apps, which is basically HTML5, JavaScript front-end, with C++ WinRT component. Yes, you can author your own WinRT component. You can extend WinRT, if you like, and expose functionality that you have in C++ to all these other languages, because they are projected in a way so that these languages can consume them, and not knowing that it's actually C++, which is interesting. So we talk about ABI safe. And ABI stands for Application Binary Interface. So basically, we make it possible to consume objects over boundaries that are not the same compiler, even the same compiler switches that are needed to consume C++ objects. So I'll get back to that later on. So what is it? It's a set of language extension. Yes, we added to the language, and we added to the libraries to allow direct consumption and authoring of Windows runtime types. And that means, yes, we can sort of use the WinRT stuff that I showed on the last slide, and we can also author it. So it's a strongly typed system, as opposed to Win32, which isn't really strongly typed. This is very flat, no classes, no namespaces. We also do automatic ref counting, and that means that you do not have to track the lifetime of your WinRT objects. That's done by the system for you, so the compiler knows how to do that. It's exception-based. Of course, with any of these object-oriented ways of building code, you really need exceptions. You don't want to pass around weird H results and stuff like that. We also want to have deep integration with STL, of course, to make it convenient to use. So it shouldn't be another... I mean, to some extent, it's new stuff, but it also integrates nicely. I have a few slides at the end on that. And again, it's a well-defined binary contract, and it's consumed from C++ in a way that you are comfortable with and used to. From JavaScript, you can't consume it in a way that's comfortable with them. And that's taken care of by the system. You author it once, and then it gets projected into these environments. So, when we started out building this, we took a fresh look at things and said, how are we going to build this? Should we have something like ATL? How many of you guys have done COM previously? A few of you. COM was component object model. It came about 20 years ago at the PDC in Anaheim, actually, in 93. When we had Windows 95 or Chicago PDC. Component object model was an extension of OLA, and it was a way of actually, sort of the ancestor to this stuff. It had its quirks, but it's actually used a lot inside Windows these days. So COM is the foundation. So it's, even though it seems like something that we did a long time ago, it's still prevalent in the OS. So it's very important. So, with COM, we took the approach of having a lot of APIs to deal with this, a lot of verbose code, very fragile. We came out with a template library that allowed us to do it a bit simpler, still a bit few quirks. This time around, we decided that let's extend the language. Let's make the compiler aware of the extensions that we want to do. And for those of you that have done C++ CLI, anyone? Yeah, so you know what this is about. You recognize the syntax. C++ CLI is actually a managed version of C++. So basically, you can create a project in Visual Studio and say, I want to do a C++ CLR type of application. And what it would do, it would set up a language, a project that contains a bunch of C++ that are compiled with the /CLR switch, which actually instructs the compiler, let's do IL of C++. And we have that so we can interoperate efficiently with .NET. And it's also very easy from C++ CLI to consume OS functions. So it was very easy to do Win32 calls. With no need for p-invoke if you're familiar with that from C#. It's a very clean language. It's ECMAScript standard. We actually took a look at that and it decided, that's pretty much what we want to do in this scenario. So we actually borrowed the syntax from C++ CLI and made a C++ component extension. And here's where some confusion can arise. Hey, it's C++. It looks like C++ CLI. This must be managed. No, it's not. So C++ CX, or when we compile with CW, it means this will be native code. We're syntactically more or less identical. So we do ref classes, value classes, interface classes, property events, delegates, things that you would expect from this kind of environment. You see GC new there. It doesn't do anything, of course, because we are in the native world. They have reserved it because they might want to do something interesting in the future, what I've heard. But for the time being, just ignore it. So that adds even more to the confusion, actually. RefNew is interesting. That's the way of instantiating or activating a WinRT object. And hat is the strong pointer, and percent is a strong reference. We'll see an example of this when we move forward. So this is basically it. It's a fairly few. It's a clean way. Some people argue that, well, you shouldn't extend the language. You should do C++11 and do everything else in template libraries or whatnot. And yeah, but the two points about that. Having it in the language allows us to do optimizations very efficiently. Making the compiler aware of all this we're doing leads to the possibility to do more efficient code. We're doing a lot of optimization this release, going to do even more later in the next. But it's simply, since we sort of increase the abstraction level, we can get the compiler to produce better code, and that's what we want, right? Also, this is boundary code. No, it's not going to compile with another compiler, but why would you want to? I mean, even if you do ATL, stuff like that, it's not going to compile on another platform either. So I guess there's some merit to saying you should stick with the standard, but at the end, it's just boundary code. And we're going to get to that in the next picture, because something that, going back to Calm, in the mid-90s, I sat down with an architect at the company I was working for at the time, and we sort of discussed how we should interoperate with other stuff. And I said, let's do Calm between these modules. Right, that makes sense. And then he came to me and said, let's do Calm everywhere, internally. And no, that you don't want that. Because, I mean, it's you crossing a boundary, you pay some price for doing that, and it's the same thing with WinRT again. It's for the cross-language use. Should you go to C++ code, rip it out, do ref classes everywhere? No, absolutely no. It doesn't make sense. Because, I mean, doing it in this old C++ or in the modern C++ way is the most efficient way, and that's what you should continue to do. You only use WinRT on the boundaries. And you see the sort of green bracket there, and it sort of signs that at the bottom, we're consuming Windows through WinRT, so we need to do the language extensions. We can also consume other WinRT components produced somewhere else, produced in-house. It allows for flexibility to be used. And on the top, we expose ourselves if we want to, not necessarily. But internally, where it's all C++, use the classes that you're used to. I don't see the point of ripping that out and replacing it with WinRT. Because face it, even though it's native code, there's going to be more cycles spent on making it consumable from other platforms. Because it's simply just a force of nature. There's more stuff that needs to happen if you cross a boundary. So if you don't have to, don't do it. So the module internal stay the same. And then I think some confusion that's been around this is that people think that, well, we need to change everywhere, and I hate the hat and all that. It's boundary code. That's where you use it. So if you want to consume WinRT objects, this is basically all you need to know. So we have a person class, and we declare a pointer to it, p hat, and hat is the strong reference. So we use that to indicate a pointer to a runtime object, as we call it. So why don't you use star, you might argue? Well, yeah. The compiler knows anyway. I think they didn't want to. I haven't really got an answer, but I think they didn't want to confuse it with raw pointers, because raw pointers is something that you really only should use in very special places with modern C++. So that might be the argument. I don't really know. It's just going to show up in the declaration of the variable. So what do? We do ref new person, and that instantiate or activate. You're going to see the word activation sort of synonymous with instantiation all over the documents. I'm not sure exactly why we do that, but that's the way we do it. And ref new instead of new is the signal to the compiler that this is actually a WinRT object. It could be declared or defined in my module, someone else's module, or just a system thing. And as I mentioned previously, we do automatic ref counting. So in the comment section of the code sample here, you see that how we maintain ref counts. So it's going to be 1 for the first 2, and then we're going to increase it to 2 because we do an assignment. There are now 2 references to the same object. And then we go out of scope, P2 disappears, and the ref counting goes down to 0, to 1, sorry. And then we have actually a special null, this null pointer. So when we set the P to that, the compiler knows to decrement the ref count, obviously. And that also makes the object go away. So it's not garbage collected. I mean, it's not removed sometime down the line if someone needs memory. When it goes out of scope, it will disappear. And that's what automatic ref counting is. So, and that's very similar to shared pointer in modern C++, which you always also should use. But this also allows us to, let's say we have a stack variable, then we will know that we don't have to ref count it because we know it should go away when we leave the method. So this is really, really the core of it. Underneath all this, there is an enhanced version of Calm. So Calm is very much alive. We have added to it. We've hidden away lots of stuff. So it tends to get automatic. At the very, very bottom of it, it's going to be add, ref, and release, which you may have seen. There are also all the kinds of threading models that you have to struggle with when you did Calm by yourself. We really take care of this, and to an extent that they actually make sure that callbacks and delegates get called on the right thread for you. That's sort of a whole another talk, but we make life a lot easier. So even if it's Calm, we have abstracted away the difficulties here, I think. So if you see references that this is Calm, yes, it is Calm. Is it an I unknown, which is down there? Yes, it is. There is. We have added I inspectable and stuff like that. So if you want to know more about this stuff, look me up afterwards. We can chat about it. We're getting down on the very deep level here. So, but really, this is what you need to know in order to consume WinRT objects. That obviously, with C++ guys, we provide infrastructures. So, of course, we need to author this stuff as well. And we could define WinRT objects in a very simple way. We declare a ref class. And a ref class indicates to the compiler that this is a WinRT object. We can have public and private, as usual. We can also have the usual access modifiers, public, protected. We get an internal as well, which we hadn't had in C++ before. Internal means what you're used to from C#. Basically, if you're in the same code source file, you can access that as well. You can only surface WinRT types in the public area. And that kind of makes sense because that's the stuff that's consumable from other languages, JavaScript, C#. And you can only have WinRT types in the method parameters. Well, you can have simple value types, of course, but if you go into more complicated than that. Because if you throw something like a C++ class on JavaScript, it's going to go, huh? What am I going to do with this? You don't know. So that's the restriction. And that's what ends up being ABI safe across languages. But of course, the private methods and variables that you put there can be any C++ type. So you're not restricted in that area. So typically you can have something that you want to expose, and you do that as a ref class. You have a well-defined set of methods, But then in the private area, you can have your internal C++ classes that they get instantiated when you construct the object or whatnot. It's very flexible. We allow what you sort of expect to be able to do. And using our own class, pretty much the same as on the last place. So you just do ref new and you have a hat pointer to it. We also have interface classes. And we can define an iAnimal. We can derive from, we can inherit them from it, and we can implement it. So interfaces, interface classes works pretty much as you expect them to and you're used to. And since we're actually saying that this is a public interface class, we don't have to say virtual void play param param equals zero that we do in sort of regular C++, because it's by definition, this is something that we will override. So it's a lot cleaner, and it does what you expect it to. So it's no, although it's new to C++, it's not a new concept at all. I mean, we're used to it from C Sharp. We have iFeline that inherits from iAnimal, and then we did define a class cat that is an iFeline, and then you can sort of instantiate it. Looking at the down left corner, we ref new cat and just party on the object. Very straightforward, pretty much as you want it to do. So, we've seen ref new and the hat declaration. You don't even have to do that. We can do put database connection, DB, like this. And that it becomes a stack variable. And then we can maintain the lifetime even simpler, because as I alluded to earlier, we don't have to keep the ref count, because you know it, when it goes out of scope, we just remove it. So that's a case where the compiler can optimize quite a lot. It also says member in the title, and you can actually put a database connection like this as a member, and it will be the lifetime will be automatically handled by the system for you. Now, will this under the covers, because we really want to know, I want to know, is it laid out on the stack or is laid out as part of the memory allocated for my class? No, it's not. It's allocated on the heap. So under the covers, it becomes the same. It's sort of an implementation detail, but these are the things that at least I like to know. The point is that semantically, it's just automatically handled the lifetime when you declare it like this. Properties. We talked about property events and delegates. And I like to do it property first, events then, and then probably delegate events, of course, because events are kind of like a delegate type property. But property is something to declare, public property string hat name, like this. And what it does is the compiler automatically generates the backing store for this property. It's something that you access as it would be a data type member, but under the hood, it's actually a getter and setter that gets generated and the backing store for it. You can define that, the getter and setter, yourself. This is very much like C Sharp's been having for quite a time now. So it's very convenient to use for simple things. Just do the trivial properties and you don't have to bother with declaring the backing. Second example here, we actually have the getter and setter, and we also have to provide the backing. You don't actually need to have a backing. It could be something else. You have a getter and setter on something more abstract, and then you have code inside it that sort of takes care of this. Very straightforward. Properties have been proposed to be part of the C++ language. It hasn't made it yet into the language. I'm hoping that we will see this in a similar or hopefully identical fashion. So this is, even though it's an extension today, I'm pretty certain that we're going to see this in the language moving forward next time around. Delegates are essentially type-safe pointers, function pointers. I mean, in function pointers are just raw pointers. In C function pointers, you have no idea what you are calling, and you don't know the signature of it. There are std functions that sort of provide a similar thing in the standard language, but just recently been added. Honestly, I haven't played around with it a lot. A delegate is a signature for a function pointer in a way. So it's something that you can instantiate like a class. When we look at the auto is this wonderful new extension. It's pretty much like C# var. It says basically to the compiler, you know the type because I'm providing an R value here, and you can derive the type from the R value. So that just be done with it. Don't make me type this twice. And that's very convenient. I really encourage you to use it if you're on a compiler support system, which I hope you are. We also have lambdas now in C++. And lambdas are really convenient. It's a way to just write code, anonymous function, if you like. And it can do parameter capturing, stuff like that. And it makes it really easy to in just one line, define this property. You don't have to define the function or method elsewhere. It just write it in line. Yeah, the two brackets is the C++ way of signaling a lambda instead of equals greater than that you have in C#. Inside the brackets, you can have capturing options. How am I supposed to capture variables that are referenced inside the lambda? By reference, by value, or by default, something like that. You can also instantiate from a free function. You can have the UI property change function that we have. You can also have a member method, so you can pass this and a method into it, and then you invoke it just like everything else. You know, the difference is this is compared to C pointers, C function pointers. This is really type safe. So you can do it there. And there's actually a bug there, because the second argument should be a string as well. And it just said false there, so it wouldn't compile. But still, it's a very elegant, clean way of using function pointers. And events is basically a way of having a property that you can sort of add a lot of delegates to, and when you fire the event, all the delegates get called. And the same with event as with properties. You can either have a trivial event with private backing stores and all the methods are generated automatically for you, or you can do it yourself. And there's three things that you need to care of: add, remove, and raise. Raise is sort of, fire this event, and then all the delegates get called under the hood. What you need to be careful about is you can do add to an event or the overloaded operator plus equals. You can't do minus equals. You need to actually keep track of the token that gets returned to you when you add. So to remove, you pass in the token as a parameter. That's the way to do it. So events are also very useful way of sort of abstracting of delivering multiple method calls in one go. WinRT is exception-based. So we have made sure that we don't have to mess with these 8 results that we talked about. These are typical COM error codes on the left-hand side in the table. You know, all the E- out of memory pointer and not implemented and whatnot. All of these are mapped to an exception that you can raise in a way that doing through ref new invalid argument exception, for instance. And that will be thrown. You can also, if we haven't sort of mapped all error codes, you can do ref new com exception. So, and just pass the H result that you want. If you have legacy code that has special error codes or something like that, you still are able to sort of integrate that kind of cleanly into the new world. You catch it by catching the exception. And you can access the H result if you want to through the exception. To catch all WinRT exceptions, you do catch platform exception hat, because everything derives from that. And in that case, you will catch, if you want to catch everything, you do dot, 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 as usual. But if you just want to do WinRT exception, you do it like this. So deriving from an exception, we can't do this currently. I'm not sure of the plans moving forward. Sorry about that. We will simply have to see. I mean, this is the way it looks like today, and it's a big step forward, because in this world, you, as I said earlier, you really want to have exception-based coding style. You don't want out params from constructors and things like that. It doesn't really work. We're adding generics as well, and this can sound kind of confusing. I mean, in C++, we have templates. Yeah, but they're kind of not the same thing. Generics in the C# sense and in the WinRT C++ CX sense is pretty much the same. So we have the possibility to pass generic parameters. So we have a look at the IPair. We have two different types, T and U, coming into it. So the first and second. And they can do then in be implemented, like on the right-hand side. So we have reflect pass string URI. And we pass string hat and URI hat to IPair, and that's the class. So using it, going down to the lower end on the slide, we just define an IPair of string hat URI hat, and then we can do get URI. That will return a pair string URI, which is an IPair of string hat URI hat. So that's the way of sort of working with generics. You can have generic templates, actually. So you can mix and match a bit. So you can actually say template, like we used to in C++, and then have it on a ref class. Now, this may sound exciting, but it isn't as exciting as you might think. It allows us to expose an instantiated template to WinRT consumers. But we can't expose the template itself, because that's C++, and the consumer doesn't know about it. So JavaScript doesn't know about the C++ template. They know about generics, they know about ref classes. So if you instantiate this with the string hat, URI hat, then JavaScript will understand. And at the bottom, we see how we actually use that. So we've talked about how we actually expose this stuff to other languages. And under the covers, what actually happens is we generate metadata, of course, because otherwise there's no way for the other languages to know. So we have a standardized way of producing metadata. There are in the SDK, of course, there are all the system DLLs, the WinRT types that come with Windows, have their respective WinMD files. WinMD is a format that we actually just took from C#. They have a great way of exposing rich metadata, and there was no point in reinventing that wheel. So we're using that to represent WinRT types. And to consume it, you can do either add new reference in Visual Studio, or you can explicitly do using and point it to the WinMD file. And then, of course, the namespace of that module becomes available to you. And how do you actually produce one? Yeah, it's built as part of building a WinRT component. So if you pull up Visual Studio 11 and select the WinRT component DLL, all this will be taken care of for you. You get a template that's actually able to produce a WinRT DLL and the associated metadata with that. So, and of course, this is what allows it to be consumed from all the other languages. So JavaScript doesn't know anything about the C++ DLL, but it knows how to look into the WinMD file and how to sort of make that work in their environment. Another interesting feature that we added is partial runtime classes. And that really means partial ref classes. A partial class is basically a way of saying we define this class here and we define it here. Then the sort of combined of them make up the entire class. And this is useful primarily for automatically generated code by tools, aka SAML. SAML generates code under the hood, and it's very convenient for it to be able to sort of own the whole source file that class is contained in. We've had these kind of things previously, but then you have the same shared header file, C++ file, and you have these comments, don't put anything in here because they will break the tooling, and it's a mess. With partial classes, it becomes much cleaner because then you can author stuff on your own, and the SAML generation will produce the partial class on its own, and combined, they will make up the entire class. And you can call... Oh, let me back up a bit. So what this semantically means? It means pretty much what you expect it to mean. It means that this works as if they were all written at the same place in the same source code file. So you can call methods in the other file, and you can sort of mix and match, and it all just works. And this is really an efficiency for SAML-based C++ apps. C-sharps have this for quite a while. And we're sort of applying the same technique to get more robust for round-tripping tools, basically. So, let's say you still don't want to use C++ CX. I mean, I've sort of given you the highlights of everything we do in there. It makes sense. It makes things easier. As always, there's a way of doing things differently if you want to. The code on the left, this is three lines of code. The first three lines actually extract the temporary storage folder for your application. So it goes to Windows Storage Application Data Current, and then it picks up the storage folder, and then it picks up the name. And then we store it in a raw pointer. You could do it in one single line, actually, using the C++ CX. We have something that we call WRL, Windows Runtime Libraries, which is an template-based way of accessing the WinRT. So this is something that we would compile with any compiler, because it's a template library, so it's just in header files and stuff like that. So you could actually use this. And I can see, yeah, maybe if you want very fine-grained control over this, you might want to use it. But just the sheer amount of code to do the exact same thing is kind of overwhelming. So the stuff on the right does the exact same thing as the three lines or the one line. And you notice how you have to do hresult checking because this is sort of you're more exposed to the extended COM world that sits beneath us. And it's all just a lot messier. And you can actually make it worse if you want to. If you sort of like really want to get to the middle, if you look at the template classes that make up WRL, you can see the individual API calls that make up this stuff. So you're going to see a lot of functions that start with RO, runtime object. So RO initialize, RO get activation factory. And I think it's interesting to have a look at that, to understand how all this fits together. I see very few cases where you actually want to do program against that in interface. I think CX does a great job of both abstracting and implementing this stuff efficiently. So, but we offer choice. So I'm going to close with a couple of slides on library integration. And that's basically how WinRT types interops with the standard C++ types. So we have the fundamental type for the collection type is vector. And we have observable vector, which allows you to get notified if something changes in the vector. and you consume that by using the same kind of syntax that we showed earlier. You do ref new vector, you provide the type into the angles, and there you go. And you do append, and you do get a static view of it, and subscribe to notification changes. Pretty straightforward vector. Nothing particularly interesting about that, other than we have it in WinRT. We also map an observable map along the same line. So map is just a collection of key value pairs. We have map and observable map, and observable map you allow us to be notified when there are changes. So, and it's pretty much insert, has key remove, standard way of interoperating with collections. The interesting part is I want to use the STL algorithms. I want to do begin end. So I'm going to do STD for each. Can I do that with a WinRT type? Yes, you can. So we made sure that all of this fits nicely into each other, so you can mix and match. You can convert easily, going back and forth, and you can also sort of just ignore the fact that it's a WinRT type, because under the hood, we have the possibility to do these kind of things. So if you look down on the left, you see that we have standard for each begin V instead of V begin. And you think, is this another extension by us? No, that's actually the C++11 way of doing it. The recommended way is to use not the member begin, it's the begin function instead to use. And here you see how we use lambdas as well, and make that pretty compelling way of working with that. So, this pretty much brings us to Q&A. We're a little bit ahead of schedule, but I deliberately sort of want to left off some time for questions. Hopefully this has given you an idea of what we're doing with C++, where we fit in, and how you can interoperate with WinRT. If you have questions that you sort of remember later, just shoot me an email. I'm anders.toon@microsoft.com. Just fire it off and I'll make sure I find the answer if I don't have it offhand. And please do the evals.
Can you tell me what of all this can you use from a desktop application?
The way we expose WinRT currently is, the short answer is nothing. The right answer is very little. So you can consume WinRT objects, but not with the language extension. You have to do WRL. So if there's something that is exposed, I don't have the list of hand. I can. So if you shoot me an email, I can just get back to you with the more precise description. But the way it is, which is a good point, I should have made it, WinRT is for Metro-style ops predominantly. All right. I must have been very clear. So if you don't want to go to the mic, I'm going to hang around here, and I'm going to hang around the whole day. Just grab me if you want to chat about something more that you don't want to do in public like this. So other than that, I thank you for coming. Good to see you guys.